From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You've seen my guest John Cho in any number of things, from the American Pie films to one of my favorites, certainly Better Luck Tomorrow, where he really exploded. And somebody at the New York Times said very nice things about him in Better Luck Tomorrow. I wonder who that was.
rhymes with
we're moving on. And of course, the series Selfie, which the last time I saw him, I told him what a great term that was for him, and he's now starring in the new film, the debut film by the visual essayist Coconata. The film is Columbus. John, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you for doing this.
I didn't mean that like
too
that.
Too late now. Now I'm really sweating. But I have to ask you, your first meet. First of all, if you can explain for the audience what Columbus is, because it might be a little tough.
Yeah, the film takes its name from the town that we shot in Columbus, Indiana, which is this little architectural mecca.
Yeah,
it's you go through the cornfields, and then there's some Walmart action and the Waffle House, and then cross a bridge, and you're in this little town. And it's one architectural wonder after another, and it's a very strange little haven. Yeah, and the movie is about, I play a guy named Jin, and Haley Lou Richardson plays Casey, and we are our unlikely friends. There's a lot of ways to describe it, but I think it's about these intense little temporary relationships that you have every once in a while in your life, and they can stay with you forever. I'm reminded of that, I'm reminded of that line in Citizen Kane. It's like the girl with the parasol on the ferry, and there isn't a day goes by
that he hasn't thought about her.
And there are some relationships like that. They are the girl in the parasol, and that's what this movie is for me.
It also, too, and I always assume that Coconut takes his name from Ozu's screenwriter, Kogo Nado. I might be wrong about this, but what was your first meeting with him like?
I just felt such a kinship with him, and in a way that I didn't expect, and that is to say, he's a Korean-American filmmaker, and I thought maybe we would... And maybe that was part of why we got along so well, but I felt like what really connected us was he's such an artist, and I mean that in a very simple way. He is not thinking about how to sell anything, how to construct something that the people will like. He is so enthusiastic about the art form, and it was a relief almost to meet someone like that after all these years.
It sounds like he too really knew what he wanted, and he was really direct about getting that across to you.
He did know what he wanted. I was startled by his confidence, particularly as a first-time feature director. I mean, and first-time dealing with actors, but he, as an example, there's a scene in the movie with Parker Posey that I have, and it was a very difficult scene to get to. It was just emotionally, there's a lot of things happening in it, and
she has so much to say and so much she can't say, and
it's
so,
correct.
There's so much about the past relationship that we can feel that isn't spoken in that scene.
Right. So there was excavating a lot of stuff, and our first shot was the shot that remains in the movie. It plays in a wide where you can see the action reflected in a vanity mirror, and we all assumed we would move in for coverage, but as we talked about after we finally got the scene right, and I said, "Are we moving in for coverage?" And he said, "No, I think I know I'm going to want to use this shot. I like it, and I don't want it to dissolve as we go into coverage." And so, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think most directors would say, "Let's get it for safety. You never know." He just knew. He was so confident in what he felt. And I think that's what we talked about the most, is does this feel authentic? Does this feel real? And, you know, I just haven't had a whole lot of experiences in my career, since it's been very modest. So I haven't had that kind of experience very often.
I think it's interesting, too, is that so much of this movie is about chemistry, and there's an immediate the chemistry between your character, between Jin and Parker Posey, but also with Haley Richardson. There's that, in fact, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is the scene where she offers you a cigarette, and then there's this talk, and we get to see exactly who Jin is, and he's fighting his nature.
You're right.
Talk about that
scene. He wants to needle her. He says, she says, she knows me because my father in the movie is in town to give a lecture, and he's from Korea. He collapses. She assumes that I'm his son because I'm the only other Asian in town. And then when I speak to her, she's surprised that I speak English because the father is from Korea. And so she assumed I was. And I said, my character says, you're surprised Asians speak English. Speak English, which is, I don't know, it was such an interesting acknowledgement of race. You know what I mean?
Also, it's the scene, too, and so much her character is about this desperation to connect because she's not educated. She doesn't know what she wants to do with her life.
Yeah.
He feels he's kind of lost because he's been pushed into a life he doesn't quite want.
Yes.
And that there's a need in both characters. In fact, so much of the movie is about that need to sort of communicate and not being able to speak to what's on the table.
Right. And then the architecture, the movie's not about architecture, and yet you're in these spaces that bring out feelings, and they're able to talk about themselves through the string between the tomato cans that is architecture, and somehow the sound vibrates through that string and they can communicate. But it's just a way for them to talk about it and not talk about it, which is what Koganada is so great at, is showing something and not showing it, and addressing it and not addressing it, and having moments play that are adjacent to the narrative that reflect the narrative back. I mean, I thought it was interesting that we just never went into that hospital room. And the father was there like more like a god than a man, you know, the unseen, like a god in the clouds, you know, that you couldn't see.
But it's also a presence that weighs over the entire film.
Yes, yes. And I think that maybe you lose that power if you do see his face, oddly enough. And, you know, it's then it becomes a challenge to show that relationship without showing that relationship, you know, and that's what we tried to do with Jin examining his father's detritus in the hotel room, picking up his things. And then there's this explicit journey of trying to figure out, Jin is trying to figure out what his father wrote in his notebook. And it's just an example of his relationship with his father in general. What are you saying? What do you want? What do you mean? Which you can tell I have no personal connection to.
My guest, who's giving way too much away about himself, is John Cho. It's the treatment we're talking about, the film which he finally gets a chance to star. The film is Columbus. One of the things I was intrigued by, and I wanted to ask you about this, and something I wanted to ask you for a long time, in fact, is you seem to approach characters, and I wonder if this is intuitive for you or conscious in terms of speaking rhythms.
Yeah, I think it's probably unconscious. As you say that, it's scary. You saw right into me. Everyone has a different thing. You know, this guy, I was thinking about how he would speak English because it was modeled. I think about speaking rhythms a lot because I don't speak a natural English. This is studied. I came to the United States and we moved to Houston when I was 6 years old and had to consciously rid myself of an accent and then take on another. And so I'm very aware of how people talk, of how I'm holding up my finger quotes, Americans talk. And by that, I guess I meant white people. And that became unconsciously, I think it was a lifelong academic pursuit. How do you speak like a native speaker? And I think a lot of immigrants, and the big joke, I think, the cosmic joke is that you can sound on the phone just like a quote American, but then they see your face and you can never pass, you know?
Yeah, I think I know.
So, anyway, yeah. So I thought about how he would speak English. It was probably more from a classroom than conversational speak. And, you know, I tried to put a little bit of that in.
Because it's almost like he's not really talking to people. And there's something really deliberate, but he's aware of the weight of words. And right. I just think about, for example, Harold is sometimes almost breathless in terms of wanting to get things out. And this rush of words will come out of him. And I've always been fascinated about that in terms of the way you address character. And I didn't realize that it came from your background, which makes all sense in the world as you talk about it. But it's something that feels to me very specific to you.
I thought about that explicitly with this character a lot. And I thought about the way the dad spoke English. And there was a scene in the North Church where Jin is recalling his father. And I don't think I've done an accented character, an immigrant character, but I've been asked to recall my parents in a scene and to say, and to do their accent. And I always resisted that because it felt like it was cheap. And I never did it. And I did it in this scene without planning it. And the accent that came out was something that I don't know if a lot of people would even recognize as a, quote, Korean accent. He was, because we see all these merchants who developed this other kind of speak. The merchant language, the merchant version of Korean English is very rough. It's a street version that it's combative, but this guy is an academic, and
so he's not fighting for attention. He knows he'll get it.
Yeah, and so he says, I don't know where I lifted this from, but it's from listening to Koreans from Korea I was always fascinated by, because they're the people that didn't have a chip on their shoulders about being Asian. I've always been fascinated by those people, and Hawaiians too, because they don't. They're the majority, and so they have a different, they walk different, their posture's different, and they don't have to yell. They don't have to demand things. But he said, architecture with a soul, which is very academic, which is a very classroom learned English, almost British. That was my way into thinking about the dad.
But that's something you do pretty often, though, isn't it? I mean, that idea of the way characters talk, and I can go back to Better Luck Tomorrow, where he's in the same way, he's really cagey about the way he speaks and people listening to him and the effect the words will have. And it's something that I get that you spend a lot of time listening to people as much as watching you listen. And there's something that comes through there too. There's something that filters in.
Yeah, I do. Sometimes I think, I like radio a lot because I think it's easier to gauge veracity through voice rather than the face to face. It's just something about I can hear whether someone's being truthful through just the sound rather than their face. I think the face can lie.
Has it always been like that for you? Has the voice always been something you've tuned into?
I don't know. Maybe. Well, this is turning into a therapy session, but you know, my maybe it's my dad. My dad was a preacher. Maybe it was just the listening to him all those years and, you know, being in church and having to listen to people speak truth. Maybe that's it.
We'll take a break and get my guest off the couch. He's John Cho. His new film, which he stars, is Columbus is the Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car. Already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Sweating here is the treatment. I'm talking to John Cho. He's the star.
The treatment takes on a new meaning.
a meaning I hadn't intended, but I never intend anything on the show. His new film as actor, he's starring in, is Columbus. But I was just thinking about so many things. I was thinking about your turn on Drunk History and the way you use language there and trying to fight through this sort of haze. And I'm fascinated by this.
I am too. I'm sort of realizing as you're saying it, it is true that it seems to be the easiest way in. And I don't know. I mean, like the way someone talks, you just start to unfold the origami and everything is there. And there's so much character revelation in the way some people pronounce things.
You're talking about your dad, though, as a preacher. And there's part of that, too, where so many of these guys grew up going to churches with the they almost always start with having to sell it, and you've got to get people's attention. And then once that happens, the sermon changes, and it takes on a whole different way. They were almost all structured like plays. I mean, you've got to win people over. And whatever way the preacher does that, they've got to do that. And then once you've got – the presumption is you've got people there paying attention rather than just being there because they think they have to be there and they kind of don't want to be there.
Yeah.
You've got to find a way to galvanize that concentration.
Yeah, there's the introduction, usually a funny story, something relatable, something in life, maybe a couple of jokes. Then you move into the scripture passage, and you get into the text part. And then in Act 3, you gotta get him to confess. Song of invitation, as they say. You need Jesus. And you got to make people conclude that by the end of the sermon.
Did you like that? Do you like hearing your dad speak as a kid?
I guess I've yes and no. I'm yes in the sense that I enjoyed watching him do something he was good at, and on the other hand, you feel watched as an observer, being a family member. I was just thinking about this because I was at the. I was at the Oscars, and which is, oh, it was a big deal. It was so much fun. It was glamorous and all that stuff. And people said, "How was it fun?" And I said, I don't know how fun it was because there's a show going on stage, but then the show is really the movie stars watching the other movie stars. That's the other show. You know, and there's cameras in the up in your grill all the time, and in a similar way, I'm comparing going to church with the Oscars, but there is this, you're being watched while you're watching, and so it's not the most comfortable experience being kin to a preacher.
Well, my guess was just gone from epistemological to ecclesiastical is John Cho. We're talking about any number of things. His new film is Columbus, in which he stars, and I guess I was wondering, too, if dealing with these sort of linguistic tools is your way of figuring out how you feel about the character.
Maybe. I mean, the way a person speaks on the page, you know, I'm either in or out, and it either makes sense or it doesn't. And I want to see, even in short clips of dialogue within the first 5-10 pages, I shouldn't have to look at their character name to know who's talking. I think I should know just by the way the words are arranged. So if that's not happening, I probably don't want to participate.
And was that always the case with Columbus? As soon as you picked it up, you could tell who Jin was.
Yeah, I was pretty immediate and thought, this is special. And then right after that, I thought, this is impossible.
impossible.
You know, and I thought, who is the first-time director that's going to come in and intuit his way through this because this is tough. The moments were small, on a small budget. I don't know how we can have the time to get these moments accurately. And I don't know. It was just the transformations, the events were so small. I just worried that we could be clumsy with it. And then I saw his work and, you know, these were video essays unbelievably emotional. This is a montage of hands, you know? And I mean, I'm getting emotional thinking about them, recalling how connected I felt to them. And then I thought, well, let's go. Let's make this movie.
Because so much of it is, I mean, there's a good chunk of this where he's on screen alone, speaking Korean.
Yeah.
Into a telephone.
Yeah.
I wonder what you see in that, because you're talking about your dad. And the thing I thought about is people go to church for truth. And as an actor, even though you're playing a fiction, you've got to find a truth in it,
yeah.
don't you?
Yeah.
And so it sounds like what you're talking about in terms of being able to identify these people is being able to find some kind of truth for yourself to play.
Yes. You know, truth, clues, I don't know.
I mean, does it have to be, feel like it's an honest thing on the page? I mean, you've got to believe
yes,
it.
Yes. You know, that's something I'm growing more and more in tune to as I get older also is you can't BS your way through a project. Like you have to be honestly about it. You have to, oh boy, I've taken stuff that I thought, well, I should take it. And then I regret it because then I'm unable to be honest within it. And not that I'm some great actor. I'm just trying to be as honest as I can in any given situation. And you know, it does start with the words and it does have to make sense. And, you know, I was just thinking about the Korean speak and I was just realizing also that there's so many clues. Maybe it's being Korean also. There's so many clues in how one speaks Korean and who is doing the speaking and who's being addressed. That there's a formal version of Korean that you use for elders, and there's a casual version that you use for people younger than you. So everything's revealed about who's in the conversation by those words and the version of Korean you use.
I guess I was thinking you're talking about this too, that you said you came to the States as a kid. And part of that too is I wonder if it throws you back to being a child because you sort of started to become Americanized at a pretty young age.
Maybe, yeah. You know, this is, again, the on-the-couch stuff, but in a bigger way, I sometimes think that acting is my way of returning to this central trauma of immigration, which is being thrust in a new environment and having to adapt. And I think, why did I choose... The scariest thing for me was to go to this new school where I didn't speak the language. That was like the worst thing that happened to me as a child, is being a new kid at school, don't speak the same language. And I've chosen this profession where I'm
That's
going
a constant.
On to, it's
yeah.
constantly new school. And I can only assume that I'm like a molested teenager that becomes a stripper. Just trying to gain mastery of the situation, man.
Before I start the rifle around for singles, let me ask you too, if there's some part of you that likes that, or if you're trying to master that moment that was.
I think so. Yeah.
You think it's more.
I'm trying to master it, and you know, I don't know what I like about it, but there is a pleasure in dealing with it, which I think, you know, if I'm to be honest with myself, I feel like that was tough. If I keep doing it, maybe I'll get better and better and better. And, you know, I did admire that about my father, or I do, which is that, you know, my mother, despite being a preacher's wife, is extraordinarily shy and is frozen in public situations and when meeting new people. And my father, I can see him, you know, when he puts a public face on. It's almost like I can see his body change, and he puts out the hand and says, "Nice to meet you." And he goes in there and makes the small talk and is able to be his authentic self even while doing that. I've always admired that about him, and I think I've marveled at it. You know, as a kid, I think, stricken by shyness, it seemed like a superpower.
There's got to be something, too, that you admire, the fact that he came and adopted another language and had to get ideas across and had to be clear and explicit and given that any sort of minor misreading of the scriptures can cause people to go, wait, what a second, what is he saying here? So that's got to feel like kind of a superpower to you too, doesn't it?
Yeah, I always, the older I get and, I have my own kids now, I can't imagine moving to a new country. It's really difficult to think about it. And especially, in the 70s and to come to America. So I always think it's funny because the immigrants always, they play it really conservative with their children and they want their children to lead very conservative lives. When I'm accusing them of being cowboys. They're the big risk takers, and then they want their children to rein it back in. But they're the dreamers.
But there's got to be some part of that too, not wanting to expose their, if it's, we're going to make this pioneer analogy, not wanting to expose their kids to the same elements that they had to endure.
I suppose that's right. But it's also, this is, deep into the couch talk, but it's my theory that immigrants, especially Korean immigrants, talk about their journey as a search for stability or better life, which I think is partially true. But what they don't admit is their pursuit of happiness, is that they're too modest to say, I came here because I wanted to, and you should do what you want to do, son or daughter. But instead they say, we came here because of you. We came here because we wanted you to have a great education. Therefore, take this life that will ensure prosperity. But what I would prefer it if they said, do what makes you happy, because we did.
But you are, aren't you?
Am I? I don't know.
I swear to you, I cannot answer that question for you.
But I'm trying.
But there's obviously some part of you that has embedded in your DNA that same kind of pioneer ambition.
I think I took that. I don't think that they approved of it initially, but they certainly didn't. They didn't explicitly object. But I think now that they look back and they say, "Oh man, he did the ultimate magic trick," because he's an immigrant's child who, found a living and happiness at the same time. It's unusual that both can happen in one life.
But there's got to be some small amount of pride in the fact that, I'm sorry to use the word pride in the biblical context, but that you are, like he, a communicator, that what you do is about sort of getting ideas across and conveying emotional truths. There is, in some way, a continuum of family tradition here, isn't there?
I have always thought so. I don't know how he feels about it, but I have always felt that there's both of our jobs had the same description, which is to convince. He had to convince you of the existence of and the supremacy of, and I have to convince you in the veracity of. I think my job's much easier, but
do you?
Similar. Yeah, first of all, I'm not alone. It's like the stand-up comic. He's up there alone. All he's got is the book and his voice. And I've got the hairstylists. I've got the special effects. I've got the script.
Well, we're out of time. Let's thank John Cho and his team for getting him here. He's starring in the film Columbus. I can't thank you enough for doing this, John. Thank you
Thanks,
so much.
Thanks, Elvis. What a pleasure.
Oh, my pleasure. Our recording engineer, who's still sitting here, is Patrick Murray. The show is mixed by Kat Yoris, edited by Blake Wright, who's associate producer. I have no truth. It's the treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.